Talkback with Gary Null, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us on this wonderful evening. Happy to share the insights that we can. No guests today. No commentaries today. I want to set aside plenty of time for you to have a chance to share your insights, your questions, your thoughts. Our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I have just completed principal photography on one section of an important film. Actually, we filmed three separate films, one on genetic engineering, one on vegetarianism, and one on poverty in India. And that film is now in the can. That's complete. And I had a chance. I'm wrapping up two other films as we speak and two important investigations, plus leading a major effort in the next, I would say, 4 weeks to get as many articles and videos and information out on challenging the legitimacy of the safety and efficacy of vaccination. It is not for me to tell you to vaccinate or not. I don't do that. Rather, to take a look at the science or the supposed science behind vaccination. And when you do take a look at what we've been able to uncover, which has now gone viral and is on hundreds and thousands of websites worldwide, you'll see that there's a growing body of concern that we've been lied to, manipulated by the pharmaceutical industry, by major governmental agencies, and by scientists for hire. In effect, there's a populist pushback. We're also doing the same thing now on AIDS. I have my sixth documentary on AIDS I'm filming. I just was filming in San Francisco. David Raznick, Dr. Peter Duisberg, many others, also in Italy, in Spain, in Germany. And we will have that documentary. It's just about dissidents. It's all the leading dissidents speaking out on AIDS and what their thoughts are on each aspect of AIDS. The HIV, was it ever isolated? The treatments, the testing, and not a single scientist out of 2,700 have suggested the HIV test is legitimate. They all say it's a scam and would never take it, never advise it for others. But between having this information come out on vaccines, on HIV, on many of the other topics I write about and talk about, and that seeping into the American consciousness, then that making its way into the political process and in the media, that could be 5 or 10 years. In normal processes, it could be 25 years. We've been fighting the battle on AIDS for 25 years and have not won. It is the most heavily funded disease in history, more so than cancer and heart disease combined. And yet they will not debate anyone on the AIDS dissident side because any debates at all will make them look stupid. So what they do, they have the quackbusters and these other real nut jobs who have no credibility, who've lost in court, who've been discredited. If you just read the transcripts, people claim to be experts or shown to have no expertise. They've lost lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit, yet the mainstream media doesn't cover them, doesn't cover this. It shows you the bias because they really are fronting for the pharmaceutical industry. And now we find out that Blackwater, the mercenary killers that have killed innocent civilians and just gotten away with murder in Iraq, they've been hired by Monsanto, a real scumbag company, real sleazy, criminal organization. They've been found guilty of criminal fraud, had to pay a $700 million fine, poisoning a whole town in the South and getting away with it until they end up being sued and found guilty. They've hired Blackwater. They infiltrate all the groups to, in effect, to be the dirty black op organization that they are, real cretins. So understand that if you are a activist, if you are a concerned citizen, if you're a person interested in the truth in anything, that these guys play down and dirty, and they have the media in their pocket. And they have all the federal agencies in their pocket. And they have all the lawmakers, Republican, Democrat, Barack Obama, all these people they have in their pocket. What they don't have in the pocket is they don't have the mass of Americans who, when finding out the truth, resent it and then start to lose trust. And at the end of the day, when a person no longer trusts you, then the one bond that allowed one person to maintain control or manipulate another is gone. It's all about trust. So they're very clever of how they can keep your trust. They hire celebrities. They hire scientists. They hire doctors. They have commercials. They have the money. They have the resources. They have the laws. Until a homemaker debates a doctor on CNN and shows that the doctor doesn't know what he's talking about when he says that, oh, there's never been any research showing there's a link between autism and vaccines. And the homemaker shows you're wrong. Well, of course he's wrong. But now we have educated people who are going on, who've done their homework, who are prepared. A year ago, not quite a year ago, about 10 months ago, there was a move in New York State to make all vaccines for healthcare workers mandatory. They were to get four vaccines, two H1N1 and two seasonal flu vaccines. First, we were told that everyone would have to get it. So if you worked at all in any hospital, nursing home, assisted living center, you would have to get the vaccines. We were told they were safe and effective. None of that was true. And they only had one hearing, and it was going to become the law. And at the last moment, with virtually no notice, a group of approximately 1,500 principally nurses and local activists from my audience showed up, and 325,000 people from my audience emailed and wrote to members of the state legislature in Albany, and we went up and demonstrated, and the protests led on the steps of the Capitol to a meeting. It was not a long meeting. It was about 40 minutes long, where I was allowed to meet the three top doctors in the state. At that meeting, they threw the standard arguments that this was safe, there were no dangers. What they didn't anticipate is that we figured out what they would be supporting, and we prepared a 110-page scientific document that we gave to them showing that their arguments were simply facetious. There was no truth to them. We then had some lawyers go around and see that every member of the legislature got a copy of Vaccine Nation, Autism Made in USA, and that 110-page scientific review showing that the flu vaccine was not safe or effective by any gold standard, nor was H1N1, nor was there a pandemic or an epidemic of H1N1. That held the day, and at least temporarily we won. But as we have seen in the past, they come back. Now they're back at it again. By the way, there was a hearing, and I was able to speak, and I was the first one in there in the morning to sign up at 8 a.m. The trouble is, instead of taking people in the order that they signed up, they had the pro-vaccine individuals speak first. And they were greeted cordially, and there was a congeniality between those who were talking about why we needed this vaccine and how it was irresponsible not to get the vaccine. We were putting people at risk. And I kept being told it would be later, later, later. And then, after all the pro-vaccine people had spoken, you saw the media leave. I was the next to last person at night at 10 o'clock to speak. I'd been there all day. Most of the people had left the room. So, in effect, nobody would know what I said. It would never have come out. But one individual, a physician, Michael Schachter, positioned himself beside the panel, right across from him, to film my testimony. I guess they thought that he must be someone official, and so they let him be there. That went up on the internet, that went viral. And I went beyond my 12 minutes, I went to about 27 minutes, but I can assure you they had no questions to ask me at the end. And I did not treat them with the respect that they're used to, or I did not defer to them. Instead, I gave them probably one of the most challenging and intense under oath testimonies they've ever had in their life. And it's up on the internet. You can see it. It went viral. And all over the world, physicians watched this. And suddenly you saw the acceptance level of H1 and N1 by doctors and nurses, specifically in Europe, just plummet, where it had been like 90% okay. It was down like 10 to 15% okay, meaning people weren't taking it. Doctors weren't using the vaccines. And that began the big pushback. And then we added 15 follow-up articles. And that's where we are today. Now we begin all over again. It's a new season, new profits to be made from the pharmaceutical company, new lies to be manufactured by the CDC and the FDA, more scientists for hire to sell their pedigree, and the public is once again left vulnerable, believing that without the H1N1, well, this year's just a flu vaccine, which they've included the H1N1 in with mercury, that they'll be susceptible. But the science is not there to support them. So we will be launching in the next week another set of articles, more films, to try to allow the American public, provide them with an opportunity to understand there's another point of view. And in a democracy, you should have open dialogue and debate. But there has been no dialogue and there's been no debate. There's been propaganda and laws to codify that propaganda. But fortunately, people are speaking up and speaking out. The Quackbusters are on the attack again. And these are well-funded individuals. These are ideologues. These are people who are irrational in their statements, wrong in their statements. But they pop up everywhere like bad viruses on the internet. Whenever you see them, whenever you hear them, challenge them. You have more than enough facts on your side to refute any statement they make. Those are my opening thoughts. Now, over to you. We have a full panel of people calling in, and I'll take calls for the remainder of the program. Again, our number is 888-874-4888. I have 15 hours of live broadcasting this week. I have 6 hours every Wednesday morning. If you're on the East Coast, it's from 3 to 9. And the West Coast, midnight to 6. Monday and Tuesday, noon and 3. And the rest of the week, except for Friday, where I have noon to 2, it's noon to 1. So, and then you can always go to the internet and download the show. By the way, 600% more people are downloading the show than listening live. And all over the world, people are downloading it. Let's say hello to Kevin from California. Hi, Kevin.
Hello, Gary. How are you?
Doing great.
Well, thank you for taking my call. My question is about soy. And if you would please bear with me, because I'm going to explain the question in 20 seconds real fast. I have heard you on a number of occasions talk about soy and that you've extensively gone through the scientific literature and found no evidence that organic soy could be detrimental to people's health. Now, I take two glasses of organic soy milk plus two scoops of your soy protein powder each day before and after exercise, plus the occasional tofus. And recently I heard a holistic doctor say that soy could negatively affect men's testosterone levels, especially vegan men. Now, considering the levels of soy that I take, would you say that's too much? And does that doctor's comment about soy affecting men's testosterone level have any validity?
All right, First, I have looked at the over 5,000 separate studies on soy. When eliminating any that were supported or paid for by the soy industry, I still had well over 2,000 articles. 99% of the articles on soy, on its health benefits, showed remarkable benefits to a person's health in a wide range of areas, from lowering the bad LDL cholesterol to preventing prostate cancer, breast cancer, the genistein isoflavones, the actual individual ingredients. The articles that were negative on soy, of which there are about 13 that I found, and they were well-designed studies. I have no problem with the design of the study. Showed that when you have principally a soy-based diet and you have goiter or you have an underactive thyroid, that could be a problem. I would fully agree with that. But I would have to back up and say I fully agree that no one should be having a mono diet, whether it's a high-protein meat diet or whether it's a 100% raw food diet. Any mono diet in and of itself is imbalanced. But if you're having a certain percentage of the diet, and if you had it in relationship to everything else in the diet, it not only encourages health, but it actually is health-promoting. Now, the problem is that the person, the medical doctor, who I do not believe is a practicing doctor, and I believe had his license removed, this person has a bias and belongs to a foundation, and the foundation has a bias. The foundation is one that supports the eating of meat, eggs, and dairy. They suggest you eat organic meat, eggs, and dairy, but they're a high animal protein diet. And this is based upon the philosophy of the founder of the foundation. And this foundation has been around since the 1930s and 40s. I had two of the proponents of this diet come on my program 5 years ago. And I asked them two questions before we got into it. I said, I just need to know for the record, have either of you received any direct or indirect funding from the dairy industry, the meat industry, or foundations supported by the dairy meat industry? And they hung up the phone. End of interview. I've only had three people in the history of my show out of 23,000 interviews actually hang up. One was recently the so-called founder of the AIDS virus, Luc Montagnier and Robert Gallo. Though Luc Montagnier later, just 3 weeks ago, you heard in for the first time on radio, you heard him state that the HIV virus that he won the Nobel Prize last year for discovering, not that he discovered it last year, he was given the Nobel Prize last year. Interesting enough, they gave it to him, but didn't give it to his supposed co-discoverer, Luc Montagnier, Robert Gallo. He said that antioxidants and oxidative stress causes the body to be more susceptible, but if you took a lot of antioxidants, you could prevent infection from the virus, and if you took a lot and you already were infected, you could get rid of the virus. When asked that question twice, he reaffirmed his statement two times, which then would give an enormous amount of credibility to what we have seen in our own clinical experience of reversing men and women who were diagnosed and treated for AIDS and full-blown AIDS of having complete and 100% recovery of their health and testing HIV negative. They were on a substantial antioxidant diet. In fact, the highest amount of antioxidants any human beings have ever received in American history, averaging 200,000 milligrams of vitamin C per day intravenous for 5 days a week over a 14-month period, all completely documented. And by the way, all open to the public at any time. They could have come into the Tri-State Healing Center, as Arthur Ashe did, as several other individuals did, on a regular basis to interview people. And in fact, Saturdays were the days that those who had AIDS-defining illnesses were getting their treatments. And because of the long time it took for them to get their intravenous treatment, they would frequently be there for about 4 hours. They'd get glutathione pushes, they'd be getting juices through that whole time, and they'd be always under the supervision of one of the staff physicians. Stokey Carmichael was there. They all saw the enormous increase in improvement. Well, we have lots of long-term survivors. Now, 25 years later, the man who wins Nobel Prize for discovering HIV, Luc Montagnier, says, yes, you can prevent it, and yes, you can get it out of the body with antioxidants. So, does that make news? Nowhere. Is that headlines? Nowhere. Does the scientific community say, my God, we've had it wrong? This is so easy? No. Does anyone say, gee whiz, all those times that Gary was on Tony Brown's Journal with those patients with their medical records and their doctors showing that they had had full-blown AIDS and today they're healthy, that, you know, vindicates that? No. So much for truth. Now, back to the soy. So when a person belongs to a foundation whose philosophy is a high animal protein, but in its organic form, and then goes on the attack against all of the literature that's there to show that they are wrong. So then you have to look at the literature. Don't focus upon the personalities, my own or anyone else. Just look at the scientific literature, and you will see what the truth is. So I believe that they've had their own economic and ideological agenda. I believe that they're not credible. I believe that they do not have any science on their side. And yet, I have given them a form. Those of you who listen to The Daily Show remember about 7 years ago, I did 2 one-hour debates with their leading advocate, and he did not come off well in those debates. He did not have the science on his side. And so that's that. Hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Gary.
All right. Let's say hello to Jim from New York City. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for taking my call. I heard you talk about if you want to lose weight, try eating food that, non-processed foods, and you could lose weight. But does food combining come into play with that? And if it does, can you just explain a little bit more about what food combining is?
Well, food combining comes from the concept that certain foods can best be digested if they're similar in their biochemistry and hence digestibility and bioavailability and absorption as other foods. But when you have a food like a sugar that requires virtually no digestion in the mouth or stomach and goes directly into the system, and you have a food that takes a long time to digest, like a fat, then that would mean eating something that had both sugar and fat together, let's say a piece of cheesecake, would be a wrong combination. It also means that based upon the work of Dr. Herbert Sheldon down in Texas, San Antonio, Texas, ran a clinic down there, that he was so exacting he made charts, and these charts were food combining charts, and the charts would show that depending upon if it was an acid or sub-sub-acid, that you could eat pineapple or papaya, but you couldn't eat them with apples. It was that technical, and only certain grains could be eaten together. And I actually wrote a book on it, Food Combining Made Easy. And then one day in the laboratory at the Institute of Applied Biology, I noticed that some of the digestion studies I was doing, simulating hydrochloric acid levels in the normal person's stomach, I saw complete hydrolysis of everything that was in the test tube. And I said, well, that's odd. And the more I started testing, and I found out that I was wrong. So after about 6 months, I contacted Dr. Herbert Sheldon, and I asked him, I said, based upon what clinical experience do you have? And he didn't have any. It was only his observations. And then when I looked further, I found out that he had some patients who actually died under his care, and he just believed in radical fasting. He would fast a person until the disease was gone. Well, you will see a difference depending upon the disease state if you take a person off what they're used to that's caused the condition. So if a person was on a high purine diet, oxalate diet, uric acid diet, let's say a high meat diet, and you were fasting them on water and you got that out of their system, you'll see some improvement. But you also see the body begin to in effect, cannibalize itself. It starts to consume its own tissue, and it's very dangerous. And his clinic was ultimately closed down. I didn't know this when I originally read his book. Only when I went down there and did my own investigation and saw that this man was way over the edge. And then I came back and I called my publisher and I said, my book is not accurate and I want to take it out of print. And they said, well, you got to buy it all back. So I bought it all back and took it all out of print And because I knew that even though the information on my book was not radical like his, it was not as scientifically accurate. And I vowed thereafter I would never do anything that I hadn't done my own clinical and scientific experiments with to verify for myself. The problem is the vast majority, probably 99% of people writing today, don't have the advantage of science on their side. If they do, they're selective. They'll only cherry-pick that science which supports their position, but they will not use the science that would challenge that. And I'll never forget one time I came down on a Monday morning. I was upstairs on the third floor, and everyone else, the chemotherapy doctors, the institute was principally a cancer research center, orthodox cancer research, and I was kind of the strange person doing nutrition work and anti-aging work upstairs. And they really didn't care because they didn't believe any of it was real. And I had done some work showing that you could extend the lifespan of mice if you improved the quality of their environment, meaning if you took them out of their enclosures and gave them different lighting and music and put their food in different places and just let them have the run of the place, they did extremely well and they lived longer. And the director of the institute listened to this, my presentation, and took a look at my paper. And he said, okay. He said, now disprove yourself. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, he said, how do you know that something you did in your methodology or your research isn't correct? You're going to have to go back and step by step see if there's anything that you've created that you can challenge. So I went back and I spent the better part of 2 weeks every day, all day, just trying to disprove myself. I wasn't able to. And then I gave it to a Dr. Berman, asked him, and he wasn't able to. And finally, about a month goes by, and I said, well, I've done all that I can, and I can't find the flaws, and other people can't find the flaws. He said, okay, then I can accept it. And that was an important lesson. Disprove yourself. Now, I use this on all things, including relationships, in business, in finance, in politics. Disprove yourself. If people had the courage to disprove their own myths, 95% of everything we believe in and do each day, we would have to change. Because we would see the contradictions, we would see the lies, deceptions. But we refuse to do that. To the contrary, we do just the opposite. We double down. We believe even more fervently in the rightness of our position. And hence, when someone makes a mistake, they're not willing to look at the mistake. There was a little piece on 60 Minutes tonight that showed a man who was considered one of the best criminal trial lawyers in America. He was also wanting to be a billionaire. He's now in prison and will spend a long time in prison because he swindled hundreds of millions of dollars. And one of his statements was extremely insightful. He was so successful, why did he need to do a Ponzi scheme? Because in his mind, he says in New York, you have to overstate everything. You really have to approve everything. You have to make a statement. And in order to show that he just wasn't another successful lawyer, he had to be the most successful lawyer. And in doing so, he had to show it with his wealth. And he said, when you have a 120-foot yacht and you have a $20 million home in the Hamptons and a $10 million home on Park Avenue, Center Park, Fifth Avenue, and you have all these other things, that then people believe that you're successful. And then the more successful people believe you are, the less you have to, in effect, prove to them. Banks and investors love to give money to people who seem like they have more than enough, but are very reluctant to give money to people who need it. Now, that tells us an awful lot about what we have just seen in the last 3 years. People who caused the crash, the Clinton Democrats, or what we call Reagan Democrats, those who are corporatists, Robert Rubin, Secretary of the Treasury under Clinton, Lawrence Summer, Secretary of the Treasury under Clinton, Timothy Geithner, the protege of Rubin. He's now the Secretary of Treasury, and Lawrence Summers is Clinton's number one political economic advisor. These people were all rich. They were all powerful, either politically powerful, or they were the business elite. But it wasn't enough, because they weren't Bill Gates, Warren Buffett. They weren't billionaires. They were merely tens of millions of millionaires. And Rubin, even more so, hundreds of millions. And so they were willing to take enormous risks without any regard for the downside and consequence. At no time in any of the meetings to get rid of the Glass-Steagall Act and to modify the Commuter Futures Trading Act did they accept the advice of anyone who would challenge them. No one was there to say, now disprove yourself. Disprove that the rationale by deregulation is going to cause the average person's savings to be protected, that will help all boats float equally. There was no contraindicated voices. The one that tried to make herself known was shouted down. And that's what we have today in virtually all circumstances. You have it with the athletes who, instead of respecting the sport and the fans, care more about the celebrity status. And that means they'll go to ever greater lengths to prove that they are not just a good athlete, but a celebrity athlete. You have the Lady Gaga, a person who can't sing or dance, but like Madonna, mocks it and choreographs it and then sells it and packages it so people say, yeah. It's like a bad restaurant that everyone's eating in and there's a line to get in. Then people want to go into that restaurant instead of the healthy, low-cost, very delicious restaurant that no one's eating in next door. Why are you in line? Because everybody's in line. But I hear they got poor food and poor service. Yeah, but everybody's in there. That's how it works in our society. Virtually everything works that way. You know, the British had the courage to come out in massive droves to protest the Pope. They haven't forgotten that this is the same Pope that when he was for 24 years, Cardinal Ratzinger, who was the chief cardinal who oversaw all of the policies and politics of the Vatican under a very pliable and easily manipulated Pope, John II, he was able to see that slush funds were put in place, that secret memorandum were distributed to make sure that pedophilia charges and child molestation charges didn't pop up, and how to protect the priests, but to deny those who were victims. A lot of people haven't forgotten that. In America, we care less. But in other countries, yeah, they have memories. Just like they protest in other countries, we don't. What would happen if we actually took the same lesson of disprove our body politic, disprove the Democrat and Republicans have the answers, disprove the media is objective. Well, you would be standing alone wondering what in the world to believe in. But I believe that's exactly where we should be. We should have all of our beliefs challenged so that we know which of those beliefs are valued and which are not, where to change, how to change, what tools we need for change, which should be the direction we go in. Otherwise, you end up like a lot of Democrats and a lot of liberals thinking that let's just go out and, you know, talk about it instead of doing something. You know, negativity does not change a problem. Focusing on it does. Hope that answers your question. Jim?
Okay. That was very comprehensive. I appreciate that. I'm just starting, you know, I'm trying to be a healthy vegetarian, eating non-processed foods. After I eat, like, brown rice, squash, and spinach, do I have to wait before I have any apples or grapes or anything?
No, remember what I said. I found that the laws of food combining simply were not correct. If you look at any of the recipes in any of the cookbooks I've written, or look at the 7 Steps to Perfect Health video, the 7 video, 14-hour seven steps, that shows you exactly how easy it is to eat healthy, lose weight, detoxify without it being a hassle. It's not complicated.
Okay.
I have found nothing in life to be complicated as far as health and happiness. Okay. Nothing. Let's say hello to Lola from New Jersey. Hi, Lola. Lola, you're on the air. Lola's hung up.
My call is very similar to your first caller's. I'm concerned. I've been a vegan for a number of years now, and I get emails from Dr. Mercola, and I'm sure you know he promotes meat eating for certain blood types, and I happen to be one of the blood types that he feels should be eating meat. And I would just like to know your thoughts about that. He also, one of the things he emailed was he told what he eats for breakfast, and he has a shake with raw eggs in it. And, I mean, I just couldn't believe it. But
okay, first understand something. Whatever choices he makes, those are his choices, and he has a right to those choices. And on many issues, Dr. Mercola and myself share very common feelings, especially on vaccines and the FDA. On diet, we share different points of view. I did a study with over 25,000 individuals. I've done over 46 clinical studies. We're just finishing one right now. We have one more month to go, and then I'm starting another one with people with mental conditions, neurological conditions. And we're going to have that one go on for 1 year. And in there, we collect good data. We get blood workups before full medical evaluations. It's medically monitored the entire time. And then we can see before and after. Well, in all the individuals, never once have we had anyone have any animal proteins. It's been strictly vegan. And in spite of the fact that it wouldn't make, it is irrelevant what a person's blood type is, across the board, people have benefited, providing that they have no deficiencies of mainly B12 and folic acid, which in a vegan diet, or L-carnosine in a vegan diet, are deficient. So by proper supplementation and making sure that they're exercising and getting the other complements of nutrients, across the board, people are healthy. But If the blood type diet was real, then only those individuals whose blood type would have been in alignment with the vegan principles would have benefited. Everyone else would have not. But that hasn't been the case. People have overcome multitude of diseases. In fact, if you go on GaryNoll.com, we have 1,600, that's 1,600 people that have voluntarily gone on to talk about what they've overcome while being on a protocol. Everything from end-stage cancers, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, loss of weight, fatigue, chronic fatigue syndrome, etc. So you have to look at challenging something. Do you remember when I said earlier you have to try to disprove yourself? Well, clinical study tries to disprove things. For example, when I put some people on a 100% raw food diet, they didn't do well. When I put them on a 75% raw and 25% living food, but lightly cooked, meaning cooked light enough that the nutrients were still alive, and therefore the energy, the vitalism of the food was still intact, they did extremely well. Therefore, 100% living food, but 75% raw food, was what we found by actual clinical experience works best. And I believe that you have to go based upon clinical experience, not something that is theoretical. And to my knowledge, this is the only time that a large number of people have been put into specifically a study to see if a vegan, healthy diet with supplementation is able to maintain a person's high-level nutritional profile across the board. And it was. And that's why I use it. Okay,
thank
Lola?
You. Thank you very much, Gary.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
And Dan from Coral Springs, Florida. Hi, Dan.
How are you doing, Gary? Thanks a lot for picking up my call.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to let you know, thanks for the advice in the past. I tried the St. John's wort and the L-theanine, and I'm still going back on the 1 milligram of Xanax at nighttime. I don't know what to do anymore. It's amazing what 1 milligram of Xanax does to me. It makes me go to sleep, and it makes me relaxed. And I got depression and anxiety, and I don't know if it's going to hurt my liver, and I've been taking it for 9 months already. So
okay,
basically,
well, I mentioned this before, Dan.
I know you did.
No, I know, but don't say I know. Let me put it a different way.
Okay.
3 weeks ago in my editing studio in New York City, where we have 6 editors working on our current list of films coming up, and the most important one of those films is Death by Medicine, we have a story that we're trying to fit into the film. And it's a very dramatic story. It's the human interest hook to the story. And it shows a woman who was completely normal, but who went through a little rough time, and her doctor gave her Xanax, and what happened to her because of that. And a year later, it shows the devastation to that and some other common medications that literally put this woman in a mental institution. And then we had to follow her for the next year and showed trying to get off of it. And it's not easy getting off. A lot of these psychoactive drugs, it's not easy getting out of your system. And you have to be extremely patient. And the more you detoxify and the more you rebalance with natural ingredients on the other end, the quicker you can do it. But it's not a quick process. Sometimes it takes a year. Sometimes it takes 2 years. I've known people it takes 3 years, because that's how much power those drugs have in recalibrating dopamine and serotonin levels in the brain to where you can't sleep a normal sleep unless you have it. That's also true of a lot of people who start taking laxatives. The number one cause of constipation in the United States is laxative abuse. They're taking laxatives and they get used to the laxatives. Then the laxative does the work that their normal peristalsis should do. Then when they stop the laxatives, now they're constipated. So then they have to take the laxatives to get themselves moving again. Well, that's not the way our body should be functioning. And because instead of getting the proper type of psychotherapy or psychoanalysis or counseling for the crisis that we frequently go into in life, we take a drug, and the drug makes it easier, because the drug takes you instantly to a place of de-stressing, instantly to a place where you can disconnect from the anxiety of your problem. It doesn't change anything except your liver enzymes and your kidney and viruses in your body. Just look at all the, for a good night's sleep, you know, or for an allergy, take this, but you may end up with viral infection that can be lethal, or you may cannot drive the next day. Those are not side effects, Dan. Those are the effects. So a suicidal ideation frequently comes from people who are suicidal and then start taking the antidepressants, then commit suicide. Anxiety is frequently a side effect of people who are taking anti-anxiety drugs, and depression is frequently a side effect of people taking antidepressants. You would think that the science in psychopharmacology and neurology would be more humanistic. It is not. It is mercenary. And they're fully aware of this. They've been aware for over 17 years that placebo is equally as effective as any selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. They're fully aware of that, which means that these are just junk. They're just there to create profit streams. So my suggestion is that you continue to seek counseling. You continue to detoxify. You continue to be patient, because it will take time to get the Xanax out of your system so that you can
break that. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you very much, Gary.
All the best to you, Dan.
All right, thanks a lot. Bye.
I'm Gary Noll, coming back in a moment with more of your questions. We have 16 minutes to go in the show, and it's all yours. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888.
you please in every way I can. Gonna give you all of me, as much as you can say. Make love to you right now, that's all I want to do. I know you need it, girl, and you know I need it too. Cause I found what the world is searching for.
I have a lot of people who ask about their memory because we have a population that is growing older, and by older I mean over the age of 40, and because of how people have lived their life before the age of 40, there's a cumulative defect in cognition and in memory in the hippocampus area of the brain. So there are certain nutrients that will make a difference. Let me just share some of those nutrients with you. One of the most important is alpha-glycerol-phosphorylcholine. Again, alpha-glycerol, G-L-Y-C-E-R-Y-L, phosphoryl, P-H-O-S-P-H-O-R-Y-L, choline, C-H-O-L-I-N-E. I'm suggesting 400 to 600 milligrams. Then a very important nutrient, phosphatidylserine at 100 milligrams, pregnenolone at about 30 milligrams, vinpocetin, V-I-N-P-O-C-E-T-I-N-E, at 15 milligrams, grapeseed extract at 200 milligrams, wild blueberry extract at 200 milligrams, ashwagandha, A-S-H-W-A-G-A-N-D-H-A, at about 100 milligrams, and those are the best. If you're able to use those, I believe you can make an enormous difference in helping yourself with your memory. And I would just like to see most Americans using that. Also, aerobic exercise, according to the latest studies, helps relieve insomnia. So, Dan, you just called in. Millions of middle-aged and older adults suffer from insomnia, and they take the drugs so they can get a good night's sleep, but it's not a good night's sleep. Well, Northwestern University has found that by exercising aerobically for an hour a day, you can improve your ability to sleep substantially at night. So I would suggest taking 3 to 5 milligrams of melatonin and exercising 1 hour a day. That will certainly help make a difference. Let's say hello to Sandy from Long Island. Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
Your turn.
I have a quick question about, I drink a couple of, I lost about 35 pounds recently, and I don't eat any meat. I'm trying to wean off coffee. How long should it take to switch to green tea if I'm trying to stop drinking coffee?
You should be able to switch over relatively easy, because if you took theanine, 200 milligrams twice a day, that would give you a calming effect, and therefore you wouldn't feel the hyperagitation from coming off the caffeine fix. When people are coming off a long-term use of caffeine, it is common for the body not to be able to rebalance itself easily, and therefore you get jittery. Your blood sugar fluctuates up and down. As the blood sugar fluctuates, so too will your emotions fluctuate, because cortisol, your stress hormone, is directly related to your blood sugar. Blood sugar goes up, cortisol goes up. Blood sugar comes down, cortisol comes down. So a green tea at about 1,200 milligrams a day, and then in divided doses, and theanine generally makes the whole transition easy.
If the caffeine in green tea is much, even though the coffee and green tea both have high caffeinated doses, it doesn't make it, the green tea has the good caffeine, right?
There's no such thing as good caffeine. Caffeine is caffeine. The difference is green tea has theanine, which is why you do not experience the hyper agitation of the caffeine because the theanine in the green tea neutralizes. And generally, you don't have a lot. You have anywhere from 5 milligrams, 15 milligrams is considered a high amount in green tea.
So I can make the switch just in one day?
Sure. I would suggest taking 100 milligrams of B complex, but taking 500 milligrams of inositol and choline each day for 2 weeks to help the body in that transition period.
And theanine's in the green tea, you're saying?
It's in it, yeah.
It's in it. Okay, thank you very much.
All the best to you.
Thank you.
Again, if you'd like to join us, please do so. You can give a call right now. Our lines are open. We had them all full. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Knoll, and this is the place to call to get insights on health, nutrition, or if you'd just like to talk about any of the other issues that are out there, please do so. From the Environmental Report, the Arctic sea ice was at its lowest level in a long time. This is from Science Daily. It says, quote, the Arctic sea ice cover appears to have reached its minimum extent for the year, and this is one of the lowest in history. Now, what this means in lay language is the sea ice reflects the sun back into the sky. That's a good thing. When the sea ice melts, then the sun goes into the water, and that heats up the water, creates algae, and releases plankton and methane gases from underneath. That's a bad thing. So the less ice you have, the worse it is for global warming. And it says consumption of a good salt can reduce population blood pressure levels. An increased intake of good potassium salts could contribute significantly to improving blood pressure. And it says the favorable effects brought about by potassium is even estimated to be comparable with the blood pressure reduction achievable by half the intake of bad sodium, mainly from table salt. So they're saying, this is from the Archives of Internal Medicine, that potassium is what we should be taking. We're not taking enough potassium in our diet. By the way, in all the major cancer studies and cancer treatments, like the Gerson therapy, they really emphasize taking lots of potassium and no sodium. Sodium causes the cancer to grow. Potassium lessens cancer growth. By the way, last week we had a very favorable feedback from Michael's show following this show, and I want to thank you all for staying on board and listening to that show last week, and hopefully this week you'll continue as well. He has a guest last week. He was just introducing his show, so you got to know a little bit about him and his philosophy, but a very interesting show. And for those of you who have warts, there's a new study out from the Canadian Medical Association Journal. It says that cryotherapy, which is just liquid nitrogen, is the most effective method to remove common warts. This was a randomized controlled trial, and they found that a lot of people have warts sometimes their whole life. A lot of times they get it in school, where it's very easy to pick up the viruses. And so they just use, quote, despite the fact that cryotherapy caused more frequent, more severe side effects than salicylic acid, patients were most satisfied when treated with the cryotherapy. So they're liquid nitrogen, and that freezes off, burns off the warts. Omega-3 fatty acids. Vitamin C and vitamin E can boost pancreatic health. This is a new study and a good study, and it shows that increased intake of the omega-3 fatty acids and vitamin C, according to the International Journal of Cancer, can substantially reduce your risk of getting pancreatic cancer. It's about 850 milligrams of omega-3. I suggest twice that. and not a whole lot of vitamin C. But in spite of this, quote, results from this large population-based case-controlled study provide additional evidence that dietary factors and use of supplements may affect risk of pancreatic cancer, unquote. So anyone in this audience is probably already taking far beyond that. Now, here's an important issue. How bad is stress in your life? Well, this is a study that will wake you up. A new study has revealed that high levels of stress increases your stress hormone cortisol that I just mentioned. That becomes a very strong predictor of cardiovascular death among people with and without pre-existing cardiovascular disease. In stressful situations, the body responds by producing the stress hormone cortisol. Now, it doesn't matter whether or not you're upset, you're in a bad relationship, you've lost your job, you're fearing something, you just don't like how you look in the mirror. No matter what your cause of stress, you're going to increase your stress hormones. The effect of cortisol, which is going to go up, is a stress hormone, but that stays up when you're chronically stressed, and that increases your risk of metabolic syndrome, atherosclerosis, cardiovascular risk factors, and that can cause you to die, even if you're healthy. This was published in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. And it also says high stress hormone levels linked to increase death from all other causes. So once again, if you're stressed, you're putting your life at risk. I'm looking at the clock. We're almost out of time. Michael Rupert's show follows ours right here on the Progressive Radio Network. Every week, even though I've been traveling, I'm told that our numbers keep going up, 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 up. What's interesting is last week our numbers exceeded, just for my program, all of Pacifica Foundation numbers of all their stations combined. So that's like, what, 860 shows? So I'm glad that people are interested in the information and sharing it. This week, a whole lot of good coming at you, a whole lot of empowering information every day, 15 hours, all this week. Have a nice evening, everyone, and please stay tuned for Michael Rupert's important show starting right now.